Peter Gagg, who drives it through.
We hit the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unforced, we never won anything.
Man's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again, and Motherwell are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is here!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson, defenders backing off.
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight myself, Jay and Buster, will go over the very satisfying 3-1 victory in the big game against Partick Thistle at the weekend. Look ahead to Hamilton Accies and the Lanarkshire Derby on Saturday. Cover this week's Remember Well question and we'll pick up on whatever else takes a fancy over the next hour or so. Guys, welcome along.
Cheers. Good evening.
We'll start with you, Jay. Saturday, we talked about the importance of the games coming up with Thistle, Accies and then Dundee United. Great way to start the three fixtures by a 3 points and a quite impressive performance as well on Saturday.
I think that's it. I mean, we spoke last week about, you know, the games coming up, and I made the suggestion or the comment that maybe it was time to stop trying to play particularly good football and maybe focus on being hard to beat, hard to break down and try and grind out results. But it was, you know, pleasantly surprising on Saturday to see that we won, and not only won, but actually won with quite a good performance. Don't think it was, you know, anything to get carried away about, but we were definitely the better team. All three goals, the play for the first, the play up to the penalty, and then the two goals after that were really good goals for different reasons. But there was, you know, good performances throughout the squad. I think we've mentioned numerous times over the last few weeks about how some of our bigger players, or so-called bigger players, haven't been stepping up every week. But I thought Saturday, that's what happened. You know, you had guys like, I thought, you know, McManus, although he didn't particularly stand out, I think he did his job well. I remember at one point, in fact, the ball going into Pogba in the middle, and I think it was Buster made a comment about how McManus had kind of just wrestled him off the ball and how he should be doing that, you know, week in, week out. The likes of McDonald was absolutely fantastic. Keith Lasley rolled back the years with, you know, getting really stuck in the middle of the park. And I think what you saw was a game where the big players that we've been, you know, demanding start putting in the performances and putting in the effort that they haven't been doing the last few weeks for whatever reason. You know, the big players turned up Saturday, they put in the performance, and, you know, that's what got us the victory. So overall, it was, you know, not just a vital 3 points that can hopefully, you know, continue to get us away, because it's still very tight at the bottom of the league. It's not, you know, every time we seem to go a couple of weeks without winning, then suddenly get a victory, we're on here talking about how potentially the top six is still an option. I think we still need to keep our eye on what's going on behind us. So it's a vital 3 points, but it's a vital 3 points with some really good performances on the day, and that's the most important thing.
Buster, in the past couple of weeks we've talked about Louis Moult and how he was in a desperate search for a goal. He got the opening goal at McDermott Park the week previous, and then on Saturday, it was another very good performance. He scored the opening goal from the penalty spot and then added a second at the beginning of the second half. That's a big thing for the team and for Louis Moult personally, to be coming into form at a really important time of the season.
Yep, as you said, you know, he's got his goals now. He's, you know, hopefully that'll set him on a wee run for the next couple of games. I think
to be honest with you, when you watch him and McDonald together, you know, they work almost perfectly together. It's, you know, I think both of them are, well, McDonald's in the 11 goals, I think Moult's about 15, and McDonald's, you know, 7 or 8 assists. So it seems to be, you know, sort of a dream partnership up there. They seem to be, as I say, working really well. They seem to know each other's, you know, game, what they're going to do. There was points on Saturday where the two of them had sort of dropped back really deep, you know, 30 yards out at the point to collect the ball. And I was thinking, that's not really what you want, the two of them dropping deep. But I think through one of those positions, it was where we actually won the penalty. One of them played the ball wide, and then, you know, Lasley got it and played the wee 1-2. But as you say, Willie Moult, I think the guy's brilliant, to be honest with you. It's kind of surprising how good he's been, to be honest with you. Obviously, when at the start of the season, you know, pre-season friendlies and stuff, we seem to be focusing on a bit more on Fletcher. You know, and that's unfortunately not really worked out great. But Willie Moult's, you know, stepped up to the plate, and as I say, 15 goals end of February. Sorry, you can't really whack that.
And a wee bit of humble pie to a certain extent for yourself as well. I think ever since you criticised or questioned Scott McDonald's performances, he's replied with two very significant performances, one at Tannadice and then again on Saturday, where I would arguably say he was man of the match.
Definitely. You know, I'm more than man enough to admit when I'm wrong. And as I say, I think I said it to you yourselves before. I think, you know, at the time it was when he was playing up front himself. He was getting caught offside quite a bit. And, you know, maybe my expectations were just a bit too much from him. But, you know, he's quite clearly, you know, possibly the best player in our team. You know, he's won things. He's played international football. You know, he's made his money through his career. So, you know, I'm more than happy to admit that I'm wrong. He's, you know, if I slag him tonight again and he proves me wrong next Saturday, I'll be delighted with that.
Jay, McDonald's comments in the press following the game were quite good as well. I thought it was encouraging to see that the guys are so focused on what lies ahead. He mentioned the fact that our results and our performances against some of the bigger teams in the league, or the so-called perceived bigger teams in the league, have been fairly decent and fairly good. But it's been the games against the likes of Partick Thistle, Hamilton Accies, that it tends to slip a wee bit. Given the magnitude of the next two games, it's good to see the guys are realising, A, that they've not turned up for some really important fixtures, and they're trying to amend that as well.
Yeah, in terms of McDonald's comments, I've not seen exactly or heard exactly what he said. I have read, you know, bits and pieces on the likes of Steelman online, etc. And it's hard to, you know, I suppose it's hard to disagree with what he's saying. And unfortunately, that's been, I think, an issue with, you know, Motherwell since pretty much the last few months of Stuart McCall's reign. You know, that seems to have been his legacy, is leaving a club who, you know, the games that you would perhaps consider as being must win, or games that you really should be winning, whether it was under Barraclough at Thistle or at Accies, or, you know, under McGee, you know, the games that, again, at Thistle, the last minute defeat, things like that. You know, those are games that you would expect to be going into and looking to get a result, and yet it wasn't, you know, that long ago we were going to Celtic Park and winning. So it's certainly something that seems to be, you know, in existence around the club as an inconsistency. It'd be great if we could sort out the results against the so-called weaker sides while maintaining the results against the bigger sides and see where that got us. But yeah, I mean, I suppose there needs to be a reality check at times every so often. And I think when you're in the form that we were in before Saturday, whether it, you know, I know what you're saying about McDonald's, it's seeming as though they've realised, but I would be surprised if they didn't realise that, you know, say it privately and behind closed doors for quite a number of weeks that they've not been good enough. But it's good that they've, you know, acknowledged it publicly. And yeah, there's no point in these kind of results against Celtic or, you know, there's no point in not having a problem against the bigger sides, as McDonald seemed to allude to, if you are going to go and, you know, drop points against the sides around you. So yeah, it'd be great to maybe go and beat, say, Aberdeen in the next few weeks, because we don't have any fear against those teams. but I would expect that it won't mean a great deal if we've already lost at New Douglas Park and then at home to Dundee United the weeks previous. So these are the games that we really need to win. I said earlier that every time we get a good result, we tend to look at the table, and because it's so tight, you start to think, well, maybe this is the start of a run that gets us into the top six. I think for the next few weeks, we need to focus on the fact that there are teams around us, and as close as the top six may be, it also means that, you know, the playoffs are very close as well. That's how tight the league is. And of course, Dundee United seem to be starting to put a few results together as well. So Saturday is vital, and if the players now understand that they need to be getting results in those games as well as you know, these games that apparently we go into with no fear, then hopefully that's a positive thing, because a win on Saturday could be vital come the end of the season, because it is the difference between, you know, Aki's going ahead of us in the table or us getting a 5-point gap.
Bastard, we discuss it on a weekly basis how tight the league is and how in any given day that one team can beat another. I suppose Dundee United, a team that didn't look capable of beating anyone, they're beginning to prove that as well. They've put two wins in the bounce together for the first time this season and drawn themselves almost back into it, considering after we beat them at Tannadice a few weeks ago, we thought that was game over for Dundee United. So it's not even just the playoff position now you're looking at. You've got to consider the fact that if you're down there in 11th place, then you need to be looking over your shoulder at 12th as well, because they are drawing themselves back into the fight.
Definitely. You know, I think we've said that amongst ourselves. In the next couple of weeks, if we end up in the bottom six, we have to play them twice, another twice at least. Oh, sorry, not least, it will be twice if we finish bottom six. I think they have to play Kilmarnock twice as well. So, although, as you say, they have been absolutely rotten for the full season, this is the point where, you know, they probably will put together a wee run. You know, I think we were saying it at some point earlier in the season as well. They're bound to go on a run. They're bound to come back. They're, you know, pick up a few points here and there. And, you know, kind of fortunately, it didn't happen. It looks as if it's maybe going to start happening now. So it's, as Jay says, as you say, it's vital that we start to actually beat these teams in and around us, because I think there's too many teams above us or round about us who have got too many games in hand. So, you know, I don't think there's any point in us even contemplating looking above us, as long as we just keep focusing on, you know, beating the teams that are Hamilton, for example, Kilmarnock, for example, Dundee United. So if we can beat those teams round about us, you know, we might end up a wee bit higher up the league, but it'd be great if we finished comfortably 10th.
It could be quite interesting, though, the fact that it is so tight. You could have a side finishing or sneaking into the top six and then finishing less points than a team that perhaps finished bottom of the league or finish the playoff position. That could be a very bizarre situation for the split to throw up.
That's what happens, though. I mean, this sort of scenario is brought up every year, and, you know, I say it happens maybe half the time or whatever, but the teams, the players, the fans, they know there's a point we've got to get to a certain position in the league. You know, and then obviously if you end up seventh, if there's seven good teams and five rotten teams, you know, whoever end up seventh could win every game in the bottom half and end up, you know, as you say, miles ahead in points of somebody who's maybe a league or two, a league position or two above them. But, you know, it happens every season. It's nothing special. People don't like it, but I don't really see the problem with it.
You can't really argue, though, that finishing in the top six could be basically the top six is a safe haven. I think every team going into the split fixtures is likely to be under threat of at least finishing the playoff position. So there's certainly motivation there to go on and gain enough points to compete for that fifth or sixth spot in the top six.
Definitely.
Well, I was just going to say, I think the motivation is just to get as many points on the board, because the relegation battle is so tight. If that, you know, somehow gets us or gets us into that sixth place, then great. But I wouldn't be, you know, banking on it. I wouldn't be really expecting it or aiming for it. You know, winning Saturday beat Dundee United and then see what we can get. Because the following three fixtures against Aberdeen, away to Inverness and home to Celtic, they're very tricky fixtures to get anything out of. So if we can get maximum points in the next two games, then anything after that's a bonus. And then if you finish in the top six, great. But at the moment, it's just about putting as much distance between ourselves and, you know, the teams round about us.
Well, we'll go ahead and talk about the Hamilton game on Saturday. I would say, Jay, that coming off the back of such a big win will give us a huge degree of optimism, and no doubt we'll take a fair support as well, which doesn't really bode well for our chances, it might be said. But again, you look at Hamilton and they're a different proposition at home than they are on the road. They've got their plastic park, a wee tight ground. It seems to all play into their hands. They'll look at the previous matches against us as well and really fancy it. And I suppose you've got to remember as well that they got a very good result against Celtic on Friday night.
Yeah, as it's one of those games that I think that a lot of Motherwell fans perhaps don't treat it with the enthusiasm you'd maybe expect from a local derby, because there is that underlying feeling that a trip to New Douglas Park isn't always the best experience. But, you know, I think they're definitely there to be beaten. I think that you look at their previous results since we drew with them last time around, apart from obviously the cup game against Annan and getting horsed off at Celtic, there isn't a lot of goals in their games. You know, I mean, I'm looking at the fixtures just now. I think, what, 0-0 against St John's, 0-0 against Hearts, 0-0 against Dundee United, and then a 1-0 win over Killie, a 2-1 defeat to Ross County, and 1-1 with Celtic. So they're not high scoring. They're not a high scoring team by any means, which will hopefully benefit us, because we, I think, defensively is where we've looked particularly suspect this season. I think a lot of our problems have come from gifting goals. You know, we spoke for months about how easy it was for teams to just launch the ball into our box, and we were absolutely shambolic trying to deal with it. So, you know, if Hamilton don't score a number of goals, then hopefully that will, you know, that will benefit us, that will suit us. And if we can go and play some of the football that we played on Saturday, create some more chances, then they're definitely there to be beaten. And as much as there is that kind of hoodoo that you want to put on it, and, you know, some terrible experiences at New Douglas Park over the last few, you know, last 18 months or so, you know, most of all the New Year's Day game last year, you know, it can go either way. It is a game that you wouldn't be surprised if we get horsed based on previous experience, but you also wouldn't be surprised if we go there and absolutely take them to bits. So if we can go with the same confidence and the same determination and the same performance levels that were pretty much throughout the entire starting 11 on Saturday, then they're definitely there to be beaten. And I think that you would expect that McGee would, unless there's injuries or suspensions, whatever, I'd be very surprised if McGee doesn't go with the same lineup. I thought, you know, Lang looked, even though he's, you would imagine, might not be as comfortable at right back as centre half, I thought he had a really good game. And I think it's also worth noting that Mark McGee didn't make one substitution the whole game, so he was obviously perfectly comfortable with the lineup he had out there. So if we can go, you know, if everybody's fit and everybody's on form again, then, you know, a low scoring Hamilton Accies side are there to be, you know, there to be beaten.
Yeah, that's, I think the point you raised about McGee not making a sub, it's been almost commonplace for the shouts of Christ, finally make a sub and blah de blah de blah. But I thought the guys that started the game still looked very fresh going into the last 10 minutes on Saturday, and I was quite impressed by that.
Well, that I must admit, it was only about... It never dawned on me. It never dawned on me that we didn't make a sub until I was having a wee look at the stats and the lineup, things like that, for recording this. It just completely passed me by, because, as you said, there weren't the normal shouts of, you know, change at McGee or make a sub. There was never really any need to. And you're completely right. There was nobody near the end of the game that looked, you know, dead in their feet. And that's not for, you know, because there wasn't the effort going in. I thought Keith Lasley, for example, you know, we hear every few weeks folk on Steelman Online or read on Steelman Online or people talking in the pub about how, you know, Keith Lasley, that's it. You know, this will be his last season. He's getting on a bit. He's past it. I thought he absolutely strolled through the game on Saturday. He was getting tore into tackles. He was up there, perhaps not man of the match. I tend to agree with yourself, Spad. I think McDonald was fantastic. But Lasley wasn't far away. And yet, by the end of the game, you know, for this player who's apparently nearing the end of his career, he seemed still perfectly, you know, perfectly fit and seemed to have plenty left still in the tank. So that was impressive, you know, not one substitute. And again, I didn't even realise that. It never dawned on me until, you know, about 20 minutes ago.
Well, Gordon, talk about some individual performances and the fact that we're getting to the time where you want to see guys getting contracts wrapped up and everything else. Louis Lang's an interesting one there. He's seemingly was a forgotten man after playing in centre of the park against Celtic in McGee's first match. He's come back in and played almost as a right back, or did play as a right back against Thistle on Saturday. And while I'm not 100% convinced his defensive qualities, I thought he was very good going forward, which for a guy of his build was quite surprising, I felt. Sorry, on you go.
No, I was going to say, he done really well on Saturday. Against St Johnston, I thought he looked a bit out of place, and I don't know if it was maybe just the tactics or the poor park at McDermott Park or whatever, but every time he got the ball against St Johnston, he just hoofed it, and it went out of the park quite a lot as well, and I was kind of disappointed in him. It's quite rightly it's been pointed out as well. When he signed penalty, everybody was really sort of pleased with that because, you know, he looked like a decent young player, could come onto a game, and you never know, a couple of years down the line, we could sell him and make a bit of money. But as you say, he just sort of disappeared. I think the whole midfield thing against Celtic was just, you know, throw a big body in there, and then McGee sort of gave it a bit of the, oh, it was not bad, we'll try it again, see what happens, just to cover his own arse. But he seems to, you know, as you say, going forward, he looked brilliant at times as well, and he was a lot more composed on the ball than he was last week. So if he's going to be like that, you know, keep him in there, give him another go.
Vital to remember as well, I suppose, Buster, that he's only 22. You kind of forget that from... I don't know why I perceive him as an older campaigner, but maybe it's just the younger guys coming into the squad, the fresher faces. But there's certainly time to develop Louis Lang and perhaps build him to a player that you could sell on for a bit of profit.
There certainly is, and you know, as you said earlier, I don't know if he's comfortable or more comfortable at centre half, or you know, if he's maybe one of those guys who's pretty comfortable playing wherever he. You know, whatever he's told. So if he can settle it right back, I know there's a lot of people who have got a vendetta, we'll say, against Josh Law, but you know, if Louis Lang can come in, you know, settle there and prove to be a better player than Josh Law in that position, then fair enough.
We'll move on and talk about the younger guys then, Chrissy Cadden and Ben Hall, who I continue to worry that we don't hear anything about these guys getting tied up in new deals, because I think both have been absolutely fantastic. Cadden's, as McGee mentioned, he's playing with a bit of swagger now and a real confidence that it can only be beneficial. There has been guys that have come into our first team. I'm thinking off the top of my head, guys like Stuart Carswell, who perhaps got a bit too much too soon, but Cadden's flourishing just now and hopefully continue to do it at Fir Park. But we must realise that there is people watching them on a regular basis, and if they can get them for nothing or for a development fee, then it will be on a few clubs' radars, you would have to expect.
I mean, it's one of those ones where it's easy to kind of, you know, we're seeing them on a weekly basis. Has he done enough to kind of alert other clubs? Possibly, but you would like to think that. You know, I don't actually know. I mean, I'm assuming from what you're saying that both are out of contract in the summer, but you would like to think that whether if it's not sitting down with the agent or you know, the player themselves and you know, having a formal discussion about contracts, you would like to think that, you know, in passing, whether it's in training or wherever, you know, there's at least, you know, conversations going on in terms of the players staying. Because, you know, you're right, there are two young players who are entirely crucial to what we're supposed to be looking to do. You know, bringing in our own young players and you know, further down the line perhaps selling them for profit. So these are the two perfect examples of players who have come into the first team, they've done exceptionally well, cemented first team places, and so I would be incredibly surprised if we're not planning on offering them extensions, and I think I'd also be surprised if it's not something that's perhaps been talked about behind the scenes, at least on an informal basis.
That's it. The team on Saturday almost had the perfect mix of youth and experience as well. Then we're getting to the stage where we asked questions over where were the young guys coming through, and you're beginning to see some signs that there are real talents there. As well, we talked about Louis Moult. You forget Moult's only 23. There's some good young players there who have already built up a wee bit of a sell-on value. And if they continue to perform the way they are, then the philosophy and the aims of the club are maybe going to be achieved, where there was a fair degree of doubt over that up to even quite recently.
Well, I think what's quite impressive, and it says a lot about both Cadden and Hall, but also, you know, a decent amount about McGee himself, is the fact that if you had to ask any Motherwell fans, you know, who did they want in the team, what young players did they want to be starting games and coming into the team and getting their chance, Dom Thomas would probably be top of the list, perhaps Craig Moore, Jack Leach had obviously been in and around the team, and I think, you know, he had got a bit of support or a few fans, you know, wanting him to get a start. I think both Chrissy Cadden and for me particularly Ben Hall, who I wasn't really clued up on at all before McGee gave him a random start. You know, these are two guys who perhaps, in terms of sort of flamboyant young players or the kind of the young exciting talent coming off the bench, these are guys who perhaps didn't, you know, were perhaps seen a little bit more unfashionable. If you like, you know, guys who perhaps. It's been quite surprising just how well they've done. And I think that says a lot about the players themselves. But I think it does, you know, say a lot about McGee, the fact that he could have just, you know, thrown Dom Thomas. You know, if he was going to play a token young player, Dom Thomas, you know, he excites fans. He's that kind of player that, you know, fans like to see because he takes people on and things like that. But instead, you know, he's brought in Ben Hall, he's brought in Chrissy Cadden, perhaps two of the names that you wouldn't have expected to see so high up the pecking order. And it's worked wonders.
What do you think the reasons for, obviously what McGee's seen in them is a huge part of that, but do you think that it's shown in the attitude that both Ben Hall and Chrissy Cadden have demonstrated, that perhaps the key element is here having your head screwed on and the right attitude to your football that have got these guys to where they are just now? But don't want to point any fingers, but there is a lot of the young players up at the club, and you look at them and they're driving very fancy cars, and you're kind of wondering if these guys have maybe had too much too soon, despite the fact that they've not achieved anything within the game. Both these guys seem to have a very grounded personality, and that seems to have boosted them when they've come into the first team.
I would be very surprised if attitude doesn't have something to do with it. I think, yeah. Particularly with a manager like Mark McGee, I think Mark McGee, for as much as, you know, some of us think that he does kind of overstep the mark a lot of times, he is a winner, you know, and he doesn't suffer fools. And I think if there was any question of players not having the right mentality and not having the right attitude and being a bit, you know, Billy Big Bollocks and that kind of idea, then I don't think they would be anywhere close to the team. In terms of, you know, I mean, if a young footballer's got the wage and wants to buy themselves a nice car, then they're perfectly entitled to do so. I'm not sure how much that says about a player's attitude, but I do think that you hear and read, you know, certain rumours, and it might be completely nonsense, but there does seem to be one or two names that are mentioned on a fairly regular basis in terms of having a poor attitude, or in terms of thinking they're the, you know, the big I am despite not having achieved anything. And I think that it would be naive to think that that doesn't come into it. And I would tend to agree. I think Ben Hall and Chrissy Cadden, as well as being good footballers and as well as, you know, taking their chance when given it, I think they have obviously shown a very good attitude that has impressed Mark McGee and given Mark McGee the confidence that when he does put them in the starting lineup, they'll continue to work just as hard and to be just as grounded.
I think that, you know, as you say, if these two players particularly, then if you know, they've got their heads screwed on, they've been, what, 3 or 4 months in the team each. You know, if they are out of contract, if they have got, you know, I don't want to say any ambition, because that's not what I mean, but, you know, if they've got a sort of, if they want to play first team football and develop themselves a wee bit, you know, I think Earth Club would be the ideal place for it. I mean, you only have to look at maybe, say, Lee Irwin, who's went down south, you know, after a good, what, 6 months again. You know, he's nowhere to be seen. Don't get me wrong, he's probably enjoying himself, earning a fortune, but, you know, he's you never really see much of him getting an appearance at Leeds, you know, and I believe he went on loan and never really got an appearance there either. So, it's one of those sort of quandaries where do you take the money and run, or, you know, if they are out of contract and if you do offer them anything, do they stay here and play another year or two before they then look to make possibly even more money?
It'll be interesting to see how it pans out. I would kind of hope that we'd hear something in the next couple of weeks, and I suppose it's maybe the kind of thing that's maybe already taking place and kept for a time that the news around the club isn't so good and results haven't been as good. You can kind of raise the spirits with a bit of good news like that, but as I say, we'll wait and see. I was just, the kind of reason for that question and a wee bit of frustration and not having heard any news is the fact that guys like Angle and Kerr and Cummins, they all seem to get deals very, very quickly after coming into the first team, and the club acted quickly to tie them down to contracts so they wouldn't lose them for nothing or for a development fee. So you'd just like to hear something for a bit of reassurance, if nothing else. Jay, well, going to this week's Remember Well question, while you're given the question, I'm going to think of an answer for it.
Fair enough. Well, it was inspired by a Louis Moult double on Saturday, so it was just, you know, looking for Motherwell fans' favourite or most memorable braces from players. A lot of responses again, so I'll try and rattle through a good few of them. So thanks to everybody who gave us a suggestion. Ian Buchanan, you know, the stalwart of the Remember Well question, says Dougie Arnott versus Celtic at Hampden in 91. You might not be aware, but this year marks 25 years since that double. I'm sure the club could have done something to mark that occasion. Also, Stevie Kurt's double against St Mirren. Daniel Glacken says Sutton's double during the 3-each game against Hearts at Tynecastle. 3-0 down with 30 minutes to play. We went out of nowhere. A Sutton brace and Hatley goals send us into chaos. Great day. I think you left at 3-0, didn't you, Sparra? William Turner said, Coyle's double at Ibrox in 97, when everyone said we had no chance, and McDonald's double against Celtic again when we had no chance. Jonathan Warnock says, Sutton against Clonakilty finished a good day. John Creakin says, Skippy Sunday. Stuart Tweedley said, Porter at Tynecastle in January 08. Over on Twitter, Scott Kennedy said a double vodka after Ibrox to calm the nerves. Jerry McDermott went with Big Nick Husak against Falkirk, fourth round of the Cup in 1991, which incidentally was my very first Motherwell game. Joe McKelvey said, I think a Louis strike partner on Saturday scored a double against someone once, that rings a bell. Callum Benson said Crawford Baptiste quickfire debut or quickfire double, I'm presuming that's meant to say, or Dougie's two near identical goals when we gubbed Rangers 3-0 in 91. Dave Taylor said Portler double at Tiny, first game after Phil's death. Dave Scott said January 2010, Bruins first game in charge, 3-0 win at Rugby Park featuring a fine brace from Jim O'Brien. Also, a freezing Sunday in February 2011 saw us beat Celtic 2-0 at Fir Park with John Sutton scoring two. Stuart Faulkner made a good point. He said Louis Moult at Parkhead a few weeks ago. Derek Wilson, Arma Ibrox in the 2-1 win in 93 will take some beating as my favourite. Alan Campbell when we own Coyle's double Ibrox as well. Gary Paul, Sutton's two headers in the 6-each game are what the big man was all about. Dunk said David Clarkson's double at Aberdeen in 2005, scoring in 63 and 69 minutes. Quite precise there, Dunks. And Christopher Hutton said Skippy Sunday. So I had quite a few suggestions there, and I've got to be honest, any answer I had for it has been covered. So I don't know if you've managed to come up with anything, Sparra.
Yeah, I'll go for a recent one, fairly recent. 2-0 down at Easter Road before Christmas, 2012-13 season. and Jamie Murphy got a double to draw his level, and then Bob McHugh toe-poked one over the line in the 80th minute to win the game 3-2.
I remember that game well because me and Marty met Archie McPherson after it. We need to see if we can get him on the podcast.
that was a special comeback that day. That was really good.
I don't actually think I've got one that's not been mentioned. How many goals did John Sutton score in the St Johnstone game? Just one? For 40 yards or something? I don't know. I was going to try and squeeze something.
Oh, the semi-final?
That.
No, I think it was Murphy, Craigan, and Sutton scored.
I don't know. I was trying to think there if, you know, I could think of any, but, well, any that haven't been mentioned. But, I don't suppose I can, to be honest with you, now.
Well, that goes down as the most disappointing answer to a Remember Well question.
I don't know what you're talking about. Every week you say, I can't think of anything. Every week you say that's
not strictly true. No, what I normally do is I mention something that's already been mentioned because I've not been listening.
Generic doubles,
Colin Henry against San Marino before decapitating somebody and getting sent off.
I'll take David Farrell's first two goals on his debut at half time or whatever that was then. Although technically it was part of a hat trick. You have to get to the two first.
We'll need to assess whether we can allow that answer. It always seems when we win, we've not got as much to talk about as when we get beat, which is...
It's because we're all moaning face bastards.
Yeah. So time's moving only past the half-hour mark and we've got some time to fill. So if anybody wants to talk about anything at all...
Lazio are getting beat 2-0 off Sassuolo, or whatever you call them, Sassuolo. So, you know, that's not a very good thing for Lazio, I suppose. They were doing pretty well this year, too.
Okay, there's a thread in the Steelman Online site just now titled Les Hutchison, which is always an interesting topic of conversation. Is Les, and he's been very, very quiet of late, as have the Welsh Society, it must be said, as well. There's a house phone going, I might answer that and we can just record that conversation. there's also a bit of speculation that Derek Weir has resigned from the club board. No confirmation from the club either way in that one. It does seem that things are slightly unsettled since the departure of Brian McCafferty towards the end of last year, that things have went rather quiet around the club, and you just hope that things are still stable and running all right, I suppose.
Well, sorry, on you go, Buster.
I was only going to say a wee quick thing anyway, but I don't know for sure. But based on any time I've seen him talk or read anything, or even when we spoke to him, I imagine it's pretty hard to work with Les Hutchison. So I don't know how involved he actually is, you know, and if it's maybe me just being a bit cynical, you know, if it's something, you know, maybe they can get along with him or anything like that. But, you know, it might just be one of these things in business that happens, you know, people move on, see what's what. But I imagine he's pretty hard to work with.
I think it's one of those ones where, of course, if the club haven't even confirmed that Derek Weir's moved on, then, you know, it's pure speculation of why and even if it's happened. The thing that I think is more interesting, and you mentioned it, Sparta, is that just how quiet both Les and the Society have been. Pretty much in 2016 so far. The Welsh Society, although we've been very critical in terms of their communication, there was still always a kind of an impression that they were still there. You know, you would get the odd email or there would be something happening, but it seems since Brian McCafferty resigned and the two new board members have come in, there doesn't seem to have been, you know, anything. I thought there would have been at least, you know, talk about, you know, voting for the new chairman and the things like that, but there just seems to have went completely silent, which isn't ideal. Maybe it is just purely trying to, you know, keep quiet while the team has been doing really poorly, because, you know, you don't want a backlash or you don't want angry football fans, you know, having somewhere else to lash out, or perhaps just the very basic kind of understanding that you're probably not going to get new members when the team's not doing particularly well. So perhaps they'll just kind of biding their time in the hope that form picks up. But it does seem to have been noticeably quiet. And the Les Hutchison thing, I think, is quite surprising as well, because it was, you know, very prominent. I tend to agree with Buster. I can understand entirely what he's saying about maybe being difficult to work with, because, you know, I think he is an incredibly arrogant guy. I think he makes Mark McGee look, you know, like a shining beacon of modesty. But, you know, it just seems to have went completely silent. You know, one week we seem to be getting hearing from him all the time, whether it was, you know, statements on the website, interviews in the paper, you know, telling us about how we need to join the Welsh Society and X, Y, and Z. And now he's just went completely quiet. And I think that can be quite worrying. There's no sort of evidence for anything, or it's purely speculation, but I think that when you've got an owner who has made it very clear that he's only doing it for a short period of time, I think that when he suddenly goes silent, and it's noticeably so, I think that can start rumours, and it can start a negative feeling, because you start to wonder, oh, is he just, you know, is he lost interest, or has he realised that the Welsh Society is never going to work? And it does kind of start to make things feel a little bit unstable, even if behind the scenes they actually aren't. So hopefully, at some point, you know, in the future, we might hear a bit more from both Les and the society just to at least confirm that everything is ticking over as it should be.
I suspect that we actually will when he wakes up for his hibernation.
It's possibly too cold for him to come over just now, but the last thing for me is we're led to believe, and I think possibly speaking from a personal point of view, myself, we did the Q&A night, myself and Joe McKelvey did the quiz night. And they were talking about how they were going to kick on with this, that, and the next thing in terms of events. And no one's kind of taken the bull by the horns and actually done anything. It was as if they kind of expected it all to be done for them. And now they've kind of burnt their bridges with me. I'm not willing to help them either. So it's kind of, nothing's happening. So it's kind of, there does seem to be a bit of an attitude that someone else will do it, that runs through the Welsh Society, and if they continue to do that, then they're not going to actually do anything.
Well, I think the most surprising thing is the fact that, you know, Brian McCafferty obviously stepped down as chairman during the elections of what was going to be one, but then became two board members. And I understand, you know, they need to get involved and they need to get comfortable and, you know, get settled in before you can start looking at who's going to be the next chairman. But I thought that, you know, presumably we don't have a chairman of either the board or the Welsh Society or the club at the moment. So, you know, I thought there would have been steps towards, you know, Welsh Society members voting on who the next chairman's going to be and things like that. And instead, it does seem to be completely quiet. But you're entirely right. I mean, to be honest, based on what you've done for the Welsh Society, you might just be as well picking who the next chairman's going to be.
Okay, I'll pick Buster.
All right, then I'll take that. Yeah, I mean, what does it involve?
But no, I tend to agree with what you're saying, Spar. Obviously, you know, a lot of what is been organised in, you know, recent months under the name of the Welsh Society hasn't actually been organised by the society themselves. So perhaps, you know, with Brian McCafferty going and that kind of instability that brings, you know, perhaps there is nobody willing to kind of grab the bull by its horns and make things happen, which is, of course, completely worrying, because that's the complete opposite of what we need at the moment.
Do they still have a full-time employee now? They went and hired someone in that role. There's, you know, No, I was going to say again, I know we bumped into him once or twice, but I've never seen anything of him since, to be fair, so I was just wondering if it's still something that's going on there.
It's very strange, as I say, that just retweeting the odd post on Twitter doesn't constitute really doing a job. If there's things going on behind the scenes, they'd possibly be well advised to tell the members what's happening rather than radio silence, because even if it is the case that Derek Weir hasn't moved on, then, as I pointed out, that's what causes speculation, just silence, and people begin to guess what's going on rather than, because they're not hearing anything from the club. It's a bit careless, really.
Well, I think, I mean, we've said plenty of times in the past, I think the whole point is that the Welsh Society needs to paint, you know, a picture. It needs to put forward, even if there is, you know, it's a little bit ramshackle, or it is you know, pessimistic in terms of whether it's going to succeed or not. They need to put on a front that they are, you know, a very capable, very dedicated. Well, I'm sure they're dedicated, but a very capable, and, you know, a very, you know, the possibility of it working is there, so that it attracts people to join. Because no one's going to join if they think it's going to fail anyway, and nobody's going to join if they're not even hearing anything from the society. I mean, you tend to forget it exists at the moment. So we're at a time when we need to be putting all efforts in as a club and as the Welsh society into trying to get people to join, and it seems that we're not even trying that anymore. It just seems to be radio silence.
Yeah, we'll stay tuned in that one as well. Guys, I think that's pretty much all we've got this week. As we said, we were actually meant to have a guest on as well. Unfortunately, Ian Pritchard couldn't join us tonight, but will do in the near future. But I assume you guys will be back next Monday?
Yes, hopefully after a fine victory at New Douglas Park.
Sounds like a good plan.
Good stuff, guys. Thanks very much as always. You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye.